squeak, squeak, swish.
No. Today, it's not a basketball day. It's a football day, Bob. It's American Thanksgiving. It's a football day.
Well, the producer apparently doesn't recognize that.
No.
Because he didn't book any football people.
No, because most Americans don't want to work today. So you need today's Higher Canadian Day. So you have to stay.
Well, wait a second. Where does that put me?
Well, in limbo. Today, are you having turkey?
Well, yeah. The question is, do I go and get sliced turkey and make a sandwich from Metro? But nobody's cooking me anything.
But now, you there? Have you ever heard of the word takeout?
Yeah, but you know.
I know you're new to the neighborhood. Places. I know you're new to the neighborhood, but there's some good takeout places for American Thanksgiving turkey dinners.
All right. Well, text me.
My wife refuses to cook turkey on the last Thursday of November. So
what's wrong with her?
I don't get it. I don't get it.
I could eat turkey once a month. I don't think I could do it more than once a month.
Oh, I love turkey.
Well, yeah, of course. And I do have a quarter of a turkey pot pie.
That doesn't count.
Well, if push comes to shove, I'll warm up some gravy and slap it on there.
That doesn't count. Anyway,
we're going to talk hoops today.
Squeak, squeak, squeak.
Yeah, we're going to talk hoops. And our pals, Eric Smith and Paul Jones are going to join us. And I guess we'll talk a little bit about the Raptors, but we want to talk about some other stuff that's going on in the league too. So stick around. Happy Thanksgiving to our American chums, pals, buddies, and to anybody else celebrating north of the 49th. McCowan and Shannon with you. We'll be back after these messages. McCowan and Shannon back with you, and our basketball buddies, Eric Smith, Paul Jones, with you.
Dribble, dribble, squeak, squeak.
There it is. Dribble, dribble, squeak, squeak.
Nice win last night, down 14. I thought they were going to get slaughtered. They were down, 11 or 12 at the half, and gave up 70-odd points.
71 points, Bob, in the first half.
It looked like they were going to get crunched. What specifically changed in the second half? Smith, give it to you first.
I think the commitment to defense, which is something that's been escaping or missing from this team for the last couple of ball games. And granted, the quality of the opponent was a little bit better with due respect to the Grizz. They're a decent team, but they're not the same caliber of trying to face the Golden State Warriors and the Portland Trail Blazers and whatnot. But I think defensively, it was certainly a tale of two halves, Bob and John, the way that Toronto kind of finally woke up defensively. And, we talk about the 71 at the half. It was 40 something in the second half, and the field goal percentage was a heck of a lot better in the second half, certainly in the fourth quarter. And I think that's what this team needs to kind of lean on. They're not going to be the type of squad over the course of the year that's going to outscore a ton of opponents by just trying to get into an offensive battle and go up and down the floor. If they're going to beat teams, they need to really buckle in on the defensive end and realize that's going to be their calling card, or it needs to be their calling card if they're going to have any kind of success.
Jones, am I misreading Nick Nurse? But I always thought he was a defense first kind of coach. Is he, do you think?
He is. I mean, he was, when he originally joined Dwayne Casey's staff, he was like the offensive coordinator. And he said that, I spent all this time thinking, how do we get buckets? How do we get buckets? And then he became the head coach and realized, hey man, if we don't stop people, we're not going to win. And they have always paid attention to defense, and he is. And I think what you're seeing this year is, to Eric's point about the numbers, they held them to 42 points in the second half, 7 of 21 in the fourth quarter, outscored them 35-21 in the last frame. And the defense was such that at the start of the year, they were pressuring people, the three parts, the pressure, the deny one pass away, and the help. They had one part going really well. They would pick you up when you got off the bus. And they would pressure you and turn you over and run out and get easy baskets. And then the word got out. Other teams were like, whoa, whoa, be careful with the ball around these guys. Don't show it to them. They'll knock it away. And then you're chasing a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1 and you're in trouble. Once other teams started to do better looking after the ball and getting past that first scrappy line of defense, then they didn't get much resistance at the back end. And I think what they're trying to do now, the Raptors, is shore that up. We're going to keep the pressure on, and this is Nick's philosophy, but I want good stuff at the back end too. if you don't get the ball or knock it away or create a turnover initially, keep playing the defense. Don't give up on it, because we'll get something at the other end. We'll get a hand in a passing lane somewhere else. We'll get a steal. And sometimes good defense is force a missed shot, Bobcat and John, and get the rebound. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the team's hovering around 500, Eric. What is the definition of this team? What are they?
I don't know if we know yet, because we are at the quarter point, but I would argue that we don't necessarily know yet. And I think part of that was they were without one of their top players for, you know, the first, first part of the season with Siakam, who's been back now for, I believe, what, 7-8 ball games now. I think that because of the youth, John, and the youth, I'm talking from top to bottom, even when you think about Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby, they're young vets. They're not old dudes, old heads in the league yet either. So I think with the youth of this team, with a lot of new pieces, even compared to this year to last year, with Scotty Barnes in the starting lineup as a rookie, I just don't know if we know yet what they are. And I don't know if the Raptors, even at the halfway point, will even figure out who are we, what are we going to do, what do we need to be consistent every single night. So I don't have a great answer for you right now. I think my answer would be what they need to be is, I'll go back to where we've been talking. They need to be a defensive first team. They need to be a team that is not leaning on one guy every night. I thought last night was a great example of it with Siakam, his 17 points. That's a solid night from Pascal, but we don't need you to be a guy that's scoring 22, 25 every single night. We need you to be a piece of the puzzle. This isn't going to be a team, I think, that's going to succeed by being carried by one individual or one or two guys every night. They're going to be better when it's the collective unit. And I think that, to me, is what they are. They are a team. As cliche, as cheeseball as that might sound, they're a team in the true sense of the word, because they don't yet have that one true superstar that can honestly carry them on either end of the floor in any game.
Are you on the same page, Paul?
Yeah, I am. Look, the third quarter last night belonged on the offensive end, belonged to Precious Achiuwa, and the fourth quarter to Gary Trent Jr. Achiuwa had all 17 of his points in the third quarter. Gary Trent he's four of, I believe he's four of seven in the fourth quarter, something like that. He goes crazy and takes things over in the fourth quarter. So, and the defense, they've got to stop people. They have to be a good defensive team, or else they're not going anywhere.
Well, I thought the bench played better too.
Bobcat, great point. I mean, the Toronto starters are second in the NBA in most points scored by a starting unit, behind only Chicago. And last night, it wasn't a lot. They had 126 points, 26 off the bench. Mm. And they got, I thought, solid minutes from Mihailuk, from Flynn. I thought Nick pushed the right button when he puts Utah Watanabe in. He sits Chris Boucher down, gave him only 7 minutes in the first half, and says, I'm not going to you in the second half. I'm going to this other guy who used to play in Memphis, is dying to play, and gives us some really good stuff. Defensive energy, will run the floor, can make shots. I'm going to give him a shot. And it turned out to that it worked well for them.
I actually think they have missed Watanabe this season until yes. He got back. I really do. I thought there were the glimmers last year in that. Do you call Tampa a bubble? In Tampa, glimmers of a real, real positiveness in the ball. And this year was supposed to be, I think, a breakout. And they missed him early on, didn't they?
I think they did. And Jones and I were chatting about it on our show earlier today as well. I think that he's a guy that just does the right thing, seems to make the right play on both ends more often than not. And he's not a guy that you necessarily need to feed offensively, but he's going to do a lot of the dirty work. And even last night, couple of blocks in the ball game, went up to contest a shot that he spoke about after the game. And I love this. And I'm paraphrasing here, Bobcat and John, where he said 100 times out of 100, I'm going to go up and attempt to block that shot. Those are guys that I want on my team, not shying away from contact, not shying away from maybe being put on a poster, just knowing that I've got a role in this team. And this is how I'm going to earn more minutes in the coach's eyes, by playing this role and by doing those intangibles. And you need more of those guys, especially when it comes to the second unit. And I think, you know, Jonesy just hit on it. That's why Chris Boucher ends up sitting down in the second half last night. He's had a rough season to this point. And if Nick Nurse is going to start getting more from, and what he needs from, guys like Utah Watanabe, Boucher is going to be on the outside looking in, because that rotation of bigs right now, you know, when he's healthy, Kem Birch is going to play. And obviously Precious Achiuwa is going to play. And now that Watanabe's healthy and in that lineup, if Chris Boucher doesn't start, you know, picking up the slack a little bit in terms of what he does, he's going to be fourth man on that depth chart because Utah is going to climb real quick.
Well, what should Boucher is an interesting story. There's lots of interesting stories here, but let's talk a bit about Boucher. What should we expect from him? It drives me crazy when the ball gets in his hands and he's 25 feet from the basket and he just says, okay, I'm going to launch one. Now, I'm not here to discuss the relative merits of a 7-footer throwing up threes, but that's not my first choice. If I got a big on the floor, I want play big, do big things, block shots, get rebounds, play with your back to the basket a little bit. You know, those are the kinds of things I want from a Boucher, not a 25 footer that might or might not hit the rim.
You know, Bobcat, you and I are from, and John too, I guess, and even Eric growing up in
the I'm getting there.
We're old school. I know.
We're from a different era where your big guys played like that. But the evolution in this new NBA is such that you got to live with Precious Achiuwa going 3-for-3 from behind the arc. I'll say this about Boucher. All of those things you said, Bobcat, save the 25 footers. He generally does. He blocks shots. He must, in my eyes, he leads the league in unexpected block shots. Guys think they can get a shot off and he comes flying out. He's all arms and legs and he gets a piece of it. He does that stuff. He runs the floor. He will rebound. But in this new NBA, there is a propensity to launch the three. And that's what he does. And the problem right now is the fact that he's not making those threes is showing up more so than the other stuff that he does or used to do. And he's not doing that other stuff as well right now. And that's, to me, that's the problem. He's got to get back to block shots, run the floor, rebound, set screens, hard roll, make mid-range shots, and not just hang around outside the arc, because he's very capable.
Well, the old school guy says, what's a 7-footer doing way out there anyway? and the new school guy saying, if you look at the first quarter of the season, he has struggled more so than the expectations a lot of those guys on that roster.
Well, and if you go back to reference what you were talking about earlier, John, Tampa last year, and again, different personnel, different role, different team, et cetera. I get all that. But Jonesy, correct me if I'm wrong, off the top of my head here, I think he averaged over 13 a game last year, and he's nowhere near that this year. And I'm just speaking about the offense, not all the other intangibles we were just discussing. I mean, you go into the season assuming that Chris Boucher is going to be a key cog in what you're doing. Certainly as a – I mean, there was even rumblings at the beginning of the season of whether he might start or not.
Start,
and he'd be in the starting lineup. You know, and then it's like, okay, well, do they go with the Chua, the guy they just acquired? Could it be Ken Burch? Because they looked pretty good with Burch last year, but he was definitely in that conversation. And now, I mean, he's nowhere near his 13 a game, and he's nowhere near his production and all the other facets. So he needs to do more, period. Or he's gonna be falling down that depth chart, as I say, in a real hurry. Because as this team gets healthier, I don't think you can afford, especially the way the Eastern Conference is playing out right now. You know, you look at how jammed up it is. Take the Raptors out of the top tier of teams. But if you look at, you know, say 5 through 12, 13, there's not a ton of separation right now. So if you want to stay in that conversation and continue to be kind of scratching and clawing and in that playoff conversation throughout the year, you don't have time to be waiting for guys. You got to, you know, if it's up to the individual, I think, to join the moving train, not to wait for it to come to you.
So where is this team's health right now, Eric?
It's a lot better than it was a week ago or so. There's not really much to discuss. Ken Burch is still dealing with a bit of a knee issue. But other than that, Siakam's back and has been back now for almost 2 full weeks now, with Watanabe finally getting back into the lineup last night. This team is as healthy, I would argue, as it's been all season. So hopefully, as this road trip comes to a close and a bulk of home games coming up in December, knock on wood that they can stay healthy, this might be the truest test that we get, or the truest sense of what this team actually is over the course of the next 10 games, because they finally have their full complement of players.
Who's the most pleasant surprise? I mean, I guess it's easy to say Barnes, but as a rookie.
But the guy who's a rookie that we think everybody thinks he's a veteran now. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, yeah. He's been really good. he's learned how to play the game. And, you know, Bob, I think it's obvious. The most, the old scenario, what most likely is, .. is. And he is the surprise to me. His footwork, you know, we saw him do the dream shake last night, get into the lane and shake some guy and go to his, turn over his left shoulder for a hook shot, an old fashioned, you know, jump hook shot. He pushes the ball, he rebounds, he sees plays. He sometimes makes what we call the hockey assist, the pass that leads to the assist, the pass before. He just sees the game so well. And I, and he's long too. He's long and athletic. And, you know, people in the organization, he's 19 or just turned 20. People think he may grow yet still. He's certainly going to put on weight and fill that body out. He has been really good. You know, last night he's one rebound away from another double-double. Nick says be more aggressive, knocks down a couple of threes, albeit one was at the end of the quarter from half court. But he's looking to do more. And I think you're going to see some ups and downs with him. But for a guy who's come in as a rookie, he has been, I think he's been terrific.
I'll give you another name, Bobcat, just quickly. And I'm sure Jonesy will piggyback this, because I know for a fact that Jonesy's been enticed and intrigued by what we've seen from Gary Trent. Gary Trent Jr., I think was good and was certainly, you know, good in Portland and good when he came to the Raptors last year in that trade for Norm Powell. But he's taken it to another level this year, and not just with his offense and his consistency offensively. And Jonesy, I'll let you take the technical aspect of that, because I know that was more up your alley. But defensively as well, the way that he has, and he's not just gambling. I think he's actually getting down in a stance and he's covering his man, and he's making it tough on guys. And I think he's shown a lot of us more defensively than what we perhaps thought he was. And if he can be that guy, not just this season, but for seasons to come, man, that's going to turn out to be one heck of a trade for the Raptors, and he'll be one heck of a piece for this team. And Jonesy, I know that the offense, you know, the basketball geek in you, you love how ready he is offensively.
Well, the game comes to him. He's not always thirsty and hunting shots. You know, you watch him in that, especially in that fourth quarter last night, he's running the floor and he knows the ball might come to him. He sits down, he puts his hands out. He's ready to shoot. He doesn't take bad shots. He's balanced when he takes shots. He makes moves and can get into the lane and finish. I just love the way he stays in his lane offensively, even though it's a very wide lane, and moves from side to side in that lane. He does create at times. He does look for a shot at times, but he looks for it after the ball's been moving and his man's chasing, or he looks for it when he has an advantage. And that's a good one, Eric. And I do believe he's been a surprise too. And I've been impressed with his defense too. I really have. I knew he was kind of pesky, but and he's really become a guy that you can count on defensively.
But if you play for Nick, isn't that a given? If you're going to play that much for Nick, you're going to have to play defense that way?
Yeah, John. And I think the thing, when I look at it with Trent, he doesn't necessarily fit the mold of that long, angular perimeter guy with a long wingspan. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he looked around and went, whoa, look at all these guys. Barnes, Watanabe, Achiuwa, Siakam, Gary, which one doesn't belong? I got to distinguish myself. If I'm going to stay on the floor, I better play defense, and I better play it well, and I better contribute as a defender, or else I'm going to be sitting on the bench no matter how good my offense is. And that talks to the point that, John, that you and Bob made earlier about Nick is a defensive coach, a defensive guy.
Well, when I asked the former question, you know, I said, well, you got to put Barnes in there. But Barnes wasn't who I was thinking. I was actually thinking of Gary Trent Jr. as the biggest surprise. He didn't play a whole lot after they got him last year. He played spotty minutes. And because of injuries, he's had an opportunity to play a lot more. I got to tell you, it'd be hard for me not to pencil him in or ink him in the starting lineup every night. I think he's good enough to be a starter. I don't know who you take out if everybody's healthy. You got to take out a big.
But in the end, does it matter who starts? In the end, does it matter who starts? Really?
Not really. I mean, but I don't want him getting 23 minutes a game. I'd like to see him out there for 35 minutes a game.
No, but I would argue, and Paul and Eric jump in here. I would argue that, and Paul kind of touched on this early in the conversation, is the second unit really hasn't delivered as where it should. The numbers speak to that. What number, whatever, the only one team has less scoring off the bench. Because in theory, more starters score for this team than one team. So that means the bench isn't scoring. So I think you need, and that was always a successful point of this team, was is that the second five could go out and be difference makers. Are they there yet? And if they aren't, I mean, a guy like Trent Jr. can really be a difference maker, right?
And John, and I'll jump on your point there. At the beginning of the year, because of that, I thought Gary Trent Jr. should come off the bench. That he would provide the spark for the second unit, and he could be a little bit thirstier in that second unit and hunt his shots and look for more and prop that second unit up, and playing against second unit players on other teams. But he's proven to be better than that, you know, and to Bob's point, I don't know if you can take him out of the starting lineup, because he's also a guy that when you put a few bench guys on the floor with him on the floor, they're going to be okay. He's okay in the hybrid unit too. So I think this guy has earned his time and deserves it.
Where are you in this, Eric?
I'll make it 3 for 3. I'd keep him in the starting lineup as well. And I've got to apologize too. Earlier, the one name I completely brain farted on when you were talking about the injury bug, John, is OG Anunoby, who we thought might have been back in the lineup last night against the Grizz. So I think there's still a chance that he could play against the Pacers. And if not, then again, the fingers crossed that he's good to go by the time the team's back home. And when I factor in him and the return, I like playing a little bit smaller, especially in today's NBA. So I'm quite happy to go with Van Vliet and Trent, with Siakam, Barnes, and Anunoby. I think that's fine.
That's my lineup. Obviously,
yeah, and that puts more of a pinch on the bigs, not to rehash the whole Chris Boucher thing, but if now suddenly Birch and Achiuwa and Watanabe are coming off the bench, well, suddenly it's going to get real crunch when you talk about minutes for the bigs. But I think what Trent has done and the way he's proven himself to this point, he's earned that starter's role to this point. And there's not one other obvious choice that you can say, okay, that's the guy then that needs to come off the bench, because clearly Fred's going to start, clearly Siakam's going to start, clearly OG's going to start. So then it comes down to that center position in that middle spot. And then to bring it full circle, John, it ultimately does come back to what you were saying. Really, the start is your name being announced, because it's the way that Nick Nurse manages the minutes. You could look down at the end of the night and Precious Achiuwa or Ken Birch might still end up playing 28, 30, 32 minutes because of just the way the rotation works. So really, it's not going to matter. It's the old cliche, but it's true. It's more about who's finishing, not who's starting.
I was going to say, when you allow 71 in the first half, I don't want to be in the starting lineup, but I sure want to be in the lineup when they're only allowing 43 or 44.
Well, I'll give you another example of why I like the starting lineup that Smitty mentioned. If there's a weakness on this team, I mean, there may be many weaknesses. We're starting to just get a sense of where they're at. But their bigs are not dominant. Their bigs might be okay, but they're no better than okay, whoever they put in as the quote-unquote center. I like the idea of going without a classic center and then using those guys when the other team's big is off the floor, when they've got their second string 7-footer in there. Because I'll tell you, I happen to think there's a dramatic difference, more of a difference between a starting big and a second big than there is at almost any other position on the floor. Second bigs tend to be tall, but not very good. And if they were really good, they'd have been traded to somebody for a boatload. So I think the Raptors have a whole bunch of those kinds of guys. Jones is nodding, so I assume
You struck a nerve, Bobcat, because last night, the way the Raptors played, and without, as you say, a traditional center, it forced Steven Adams to be on the bench.
Yes.
He's a traditional bit. And at the end of the game, Taylor Jenkins looked out there and went, well, who's he going to cover? Like they'll put him in screen and roll and he'll drop back. And that gives the guy an open 15, 17, 20, whatever wherever they decide to set the screen, the guy's going to come off and be open. And so it was, well, Steven Adams has got to go to the bench, and we can't play with one of our best rebounders in our traditional big. And now you're playing the other guy's game and they're better at it than you are. Where you get hurt is in a game like Utah, where they do have, as you said, the difference, Bob, between a number one big and a number two big. They have Rudy Gobert, and they ran screen and roll and sent him down the middle of the lane. And it was like, oh boy, what are we going to do? And he was getting dunks. He was getting the ball to the basket. If he chose to pitch it out for an open three, that, and there, but let's say, let's face it, there aren't too many of those dominant big
That's
guys
right.
around like that.
There's a half dozen games a year where you're going to face somebody like that.
Exactly.
So adjust, adjust in those games, but not in the other 76. That's
well,
my
yeah. point. Make them adjust to you. You're
make,
right.
make them play your game.
That's why Nick gets the big bucks. That's why, right there.
I want to take a quick break and we'll chat some more about the Raptors and the NBA in general. Eric Smith, Paul Jones are with us, back after these messages. McCowan, Shannon, Eric Smith, Paul Jones around this table, so to speak. All right, so I'm going to get in a lot of trouble here by saying something.
Can I go on mute?
I'm yeah, you can. I'm guessing you guys are going to disagree with me. Pascal Siakam, I consider a friend. He's been on this program. I think we were, when we were doing radio and TV at Sportsnet, he was, one of his first interviews was in studio with us.
Yeah.
And he did that more than a few times. I like him. I like him a lot. I like his agent even. I chat with his agent on a regular basis. I'm just not sure he fits this team. I don't know what it is, but, and I don't want to get caught in the, you're paying him $30 million. He's got to be better than he was when he was getting $8 million. But there's a reality in that. And
what are you trading him?
It feels to me as if too often the ball stops when it gets in Pascal's hands. And is he good enough to be that kind of guy? There's plenty of guys in the NBA who you get the ball in their hands, let them go, because they're going to produce for you. Is he producing enough right now? Either one of you.
I would take the exact opposite approach of you, Bob, and say he might actually fit perfectly with this team. And the reason I say that is I think that this team has enough other guys that they don't need to lean on Pascal to be the guy, and that's where he fits better. Now, granted, there is not a Kawhi Leonard. There is no longer even a Kyle Lowry, as much as Van Vliet may be certainly, you know, blossoming into that type of guy. But when was Pascal at his best? When he was surrounded by more talent and he could be the second, third, even fourth option on a team. And I think that on this team right now, he can go out and he will easily, consistently get you 15 to 18. But you don't need him to go out and get you 25. But I like the fact that I know he can get me 25 if need be. Or he can even go out and get me 30, 35 on certain nights too. There are enough pieces around where I think it's going to come back to Pascal, Bob, to your point about, you know, whether it's his decision-making or whether it's his shot-making, or that's on him, I think. Are you willing to take a step back? Are you willing to move the ball? Are you willing to be a decoy at times? Are you willing to step into the spotlight and be the man when needed as well? I think that comes back more on him, because if he recognizes that he's got Ananobi blossoming, and Van Vliet, and Barnes certainly turning into something, and Trent, he's got a lot of pieces. You don't have to carry that load, but it comes down on you as an individual and your ego. And I'm not implying that he has an ego. It's that's anybody in life in general. How much will your ego hold you back, or will it allow you to be better in the long run because the team is better in the long run?
I think that's really well said. And I think that reflects sort of my opinion of where we're at here. Jones.
I would say the same thing. It's about trusting teammates. And we can look back at the championship year and his development with better players around him. He has good players around him. And Bobcat, you know, to your point of the ball stopping when he gets in his hands, there are times when he feels, okay, I got to do this now. It's my turn to do something for the team. And that's when, you know, he goes into takeover mode, and he's quite capable of doing it. I just don't think you need to see it with the regularity that maybe you see it with Bobcat. You know, trust those other guys. And I think he fits the profile. You know, you just talked about having playing with a non-traditional lineup without a traditional center. Pascal fits that bill. He's one of those guys. He, Birch, Achua, they're not, they can play on the front line and play against maybe those big hulking guys for limited minutes, not with the regularity that you need to, but he fits the profile. Long, athletic, can do many things. Just a tall basketball player. Handle the ball, play defense, pass it, shoot it, drive it, create. I think he fits that bill in as you talked about earlier, Bobcat, the non-traditional way. So I think he is a good fit. I do think he fits with this team.
Well, let me ask you this question. How many games has Nick Nurse had his ideal starting lineup on the floor?
Not many, because
I was going to say five or six.
That might even be less than that. Yeah.
Amongst the league leaders in most starting lineups.
So, I'm always a believer in patience. I also think that, and we kind of got this out of Pascal when he was on the show, Bob, where he said, I've got to learn to be a better leader. I think when you consider that the starting lineup has not been on the court near as much as everybody expected to because of injuries, and the fact that that big salary and he now sees his role changing and morphing because there is no Lowry around, I think you got to be patient, man. If this question comes up in February, I think it's a fair question. The fact that it comes up in the last week in November, far too early, man. Far too early.
Well, I love the guy and I love his game. And I didn't complain at all or have any negativity when he got his $30 million contract. It's just, and I know he hasn't been around for that long, couple of weeks really, since he came back from the injury. And not only does he have to get himself in game shape, he has to figure out what's going on out there. But there are things about his game that concern me, and his responsibility or his opinion that he has to do certain things.
Yeah, but he's learning that, Bob. Now he's learning now.
Well, we'll see whether he's learning it. You know, I'd be
more concerned if he stopped learning.
Look, there are just a few too many times where he gets the ball and finds himself in a double team and isn't really looking for the open man. He wants to beat the double team. And I understand that. It's not a criticism, it's an observation. And maybe it's just an evolutionary thing. And we'll see how.
Well, wait till I tell Pascal you want to trade him. Holy smokes.
I never said
that. I can't believe you said that. The social media is going to be full of it. McCowan says trade Siakam. It's crazy.
Well, hang on a second. Who'd you have in mind in the deal?
hey, listen. If Wilt Chamberlain, Wayne Gretzky, Shaquille O'Neal can be traded. As Pascal or any one of us can be on the block too. So that I'm always willing to listen, Bobcat.
Hey, can I ask? It was Memphis last night. Can I ask a question about Memphis? Why aren't they better? I mean, I see John Morant. I mean, he's such a beautiful basketball player. Why aren't they better than they are? I mean, how frustrating would it be to be a Grizzlies basketball fan? My goodness gracious.
I think they are better, don't you? I think they are better. They're just not quite there yet.
I think they are better. You can almost transfer a lot of what we're talking about with the Raptors to Memphis. Mm. I think they've got a lot of young pieces, but they're a very young team. Outside of Steven Adams, I can't think of really another vet, maybe Kyle Anderson, veteran piece on this team. So they're very young, but they've got some good pieces. To me, what would be more concerning, you mentioned the fans, John. Not to get away from basketball and, you know, talk business necessarily. They've got a young star in the rising in Memphis. They're in the bottom three of the league in attendance.
It's not a big city. It's not a big city.
I know. But I mean, don't get me started, though, on the fact that they never should have left Vancouver.
Bring them back.
It's been abysmal since they went to Memphis. So, like, John Morant right now in Vancouver, that place would be sold out. Yeah. You know, you take this exact same Grizzlies team at 9-9 with John Morant. That building is sold out in Vancouver, especially when you factor in how bad the Canucks are right now. So I think they actually are a good team, and they got some good young pieces when you think about, you know, Clark and Jaren Jackson as well, and Dylan Brooks, the Canadian. Like, I think they are good. It's the tough thing is trying to do it in the Western Conference with a lot of those big boys around you, that's going to be a grind.
Paul, how good are they? Have two. Eric mentioned one of the Canadians. How good are their two young Canadians?
They're really good. Dylan Brooks is he's a hard nosed, old school kind of guy. Like, he will go after you.
Yeah.
He plays hard. He's not afraid. And then Clark last night, I mean, the Raptors could not stop him in the paint. And again, a guy that stays in his lane, he's Bobcat's dream. I don't think he took a three last night, you know, as a big guy. He's not out there standing behind the arc going, "Wee, watch me. I'm going to make a couple of these." He's got his backside close to the basket. He's rebounding. He's scoring on screen and rolls. He's taking the ball inside. You know, he's making back to the basket moves. So they are really good. And to your point, John, to Eric's point, they don't have a lot of vets. Anderson and Adams are the two vets.
Yeah.
And they're a young, growing team. And, you know, they got into the play-in last year, and this is part of the progression for them. And I'm willing to give them 2 or 3 years. If they haven't kind of moved up to where they're, give them 2 years. If they haven't moved up to where they're fifth or sixth consistently and knocking on the door and getting into the first round, legit first round and making noise, then you look at and maybe making some changes, because some of those young guys are going to grow. And to Bob's point about trade, they're going to look good to other people who'll say, mm-hmm. yeah, we'll take him and make some moves, and you can improve your team.
Or they'll walk as free agents.
Well, and that's the fear to me when you got have a guy like Morant who's so good. And if you don't,
every team in the NBA will want him.
Yeah,
every single team.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
You know, and in the NBA, as you guys know, short contracts, free agency comes a lot quicker, and the numbers get bigger. And next thing you know, he's playing for the Knicks. You know,
I was going to say the Lakers.
I said every team will want him, but nobody goes to the Knicks. Who's?
Well, come on, the Knicks are pretty good this year. The Knicks are playing better.
We'll see.
I was going to say Lakers. LeBron will be done in like 3-4 years, right?
Speaking of LeBron,
maybe.
What did you make of the LeBron fight, and what did you make of all that and the suspensions? I didn't hear your show, so forgive
Eric
me.
And I differ on this. I thought it was LeBron just trying to get off me. It wasn't intentional, but you guys hockey guys know you got to be responsible for your stick. So I would have fined LeBron and suspended Stewart for a game for his histrionics
antics?
And the way he carried his antics. Yeah. That I know Eric wanted like 5 games and stuff.
It happens. You misrepresent the situation. So Jonesy, we're in lockstep until Isaiah Stewart. I think LeBron, yes, has to be responsible for his hand, for his fist, whatever. I would not have suspended him. He caught him in the face. He attempted to apologize right away, and he did nothing to inflame or fan
Insight.
The flames on the floor. He tried to calm things. He stood back. Even his teammates that jumped in on behalf of him, nobody's throwing fists. Barely anybody was grabbing anybody. But then you've got Isaiah Stewart going maniacal on the court, running all over the place, throwing trainers to the ground, male and female, security staff flying all over the place, blood dripping down his face, and coming wave after wave after wave, like 3-4 times, to the point where even in the locker room, he throws one of his own staff members into a wall and then goes running like gangbusters into the back trying to get to the other hallway. That, to me, especially considering in Detroit, less than a week removed from the 17-year anniversary of the Malice at the Palace, that's a embarrassment on the league that you don't need. And I'm not saying throw the book at the guy. I'm not sitting here saying 10, 20 games, but 2 games and only one more than LeBron, who probably shouldn't have got any. I think it should have at least been a minimum 3, if not 5 games for the, as Jonesy often uses the word, for the histrionics alone, for the temper tantrum, for the embarrassment that I think it was that he could not control and calm himself.
Well, the CBA, Bob, you and John know this. The CBA puts the governor, they put limits on how far you can go with a player. And Eric, I agree with what you said, but knowing the CBA and all of us being the head of something at some point, knowing how far you can go in management before a collective agreement put the brakes on you, I knew he wasn't getting more than 2, maybe 3 games at the most.
Right.
Before we go, I think it's warranted to spend a couple of minutes at least, given we've all just seen them play. And I watched them play a little bit last night too, The Golden State Warriors are
wow.
That's what they are. They're wow. And you know, it's a wow because they were the best team in the NBA for a good period of time, won a bunch of championships, probably only lost to the Raptors because of the injuries. I mean,
sure.
Got to be honest. You know, if the Warriors are healthy, I don't know that the Raptors wind up beating them 2 years ago. And then they go completely in the tank. What did they win? 20 something games. And with
so many injuries last year,
with injuries, I get it. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
But cite the case of a team that has come back anywhere near this. Remember, I was going to say their biggest star, Durant, but one of their biggest stars isn't coming back, left, and is gone to Brooklyn. Another one of their big stars hasn't played a game.
But remember, this was a team that was pretty good before Durant and is now back being pretty good after Durant.
Oh,
Durant,
they're better than pretty good.
Kevin Durant was a visitor. He came for titles. That's right. Yeah. You know, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson when he's healthy and Green, there's the nucleus. There it is. And Iguodala back, you know.
Yeah, they reloaded in a hurry, Bobcat. You're right. And I think the style of play and finding guys that fit their style and play with the basketball acumen that you need to play in Golden State, they found some, and they found them quickly. And
including Andrew Wiggins.
Look at him. He becomes, as the third option there, he's a great fit. He's learning the game. He's understanding. You're around Draymond Green, a mind like that, Steph Curry. I mean, a rising tide lifts all boats, and that's what it is, Bob. I think they just found the right guys and fit nicely in their system.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you look at the Lakers. The Lakers retooled by spending as much money as they possibly could for superstars. Golden State hasn't done that.
Yeah.
Golden State didn't go and get a superstar. I mean, you can say Wiggins is a very good player, number one draft choice, but in Minnesota, did nothing, really. Yeah. I mean, he played okay, but he didn't lead that franchise anywhere. Now, as a smaller piece of the puzzle.
The core hasn't changed. The core hasn't changed, guys. That's the key. The core hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And Steve Kerr's a damn good coach.
Well, and the other thing, though, too, to Bob's point is they've sprinkled in the right amount of youth and not just gone for the old heads, the old contract guys that might be a little bit washed, because I don't think there's a better team in the league right now that is balancing the vets with the youth. I mean, for as great as Steph Curry's been, he's maybe not been as good, but Jordan Poole's been fantastic for that team this year. And let's also think about, they're not even doing it with their top pick from last year. Like Wiseman's been out of the lineup too. So it's other guys that have been stepping up and performing for this team. And then John, you mentioned well-coached as well. It's just, it's such a great balance right now. And to think that you're going to add a three-point shooter, a scorer, and one of the best defenders in the league as well in Klay Thompson to a team that's already 15-16-2. It's scary to think about how good this team could ultimately be. And there's got to be a blip coming for them at some point, but I don't see them slowing down too much because they're just so well balanced right now. And if Steph Curry's going to keep pulling up from 30 feet and knocking them down, you can't stop that. Can't stop that.
Well, was it Philly last night they played?
Yeah.
And Philly had them, you know, as they say, by the short and curlies in the first half. And it looked like, here's one that you're not expecting.
No.
And then Golden State just kind of said, all right, let's go.
Okay.
Yeah, that was we'll spot you. We'll give you a head start, but we're still going to beat you to the finish line.
Wipe them out.
By the way, this is a football Thursday. And for the record, we're not going to ask Eric about his bad football team, the Buffalo Bills.
They're not bad. What are you talking about, John?
How about those Brownies, Bobcat?
What time are the Bills expected to lose today?
All right, I'll take wagers from both of you. 8:20 kickoff.
Bob is, I tell you what, Bob,
I guarantee you they're winning tonight.
Bob is on the Colts bandwagon.
Well, he better get off the Browns, so he's got to pick some team.
Oh, come on.
Look, I'm no Colts fan by any stretch of the imagination. No. Not in the least. I just looked at a team and said, anybody who overlooks this team right now is making a big mistake.
And were you saying that 3 weeks ago when they were, what, two or three games below 500, Bobcat? No. And Carson Wentz looked like Carson Wentz?
Well, I got news for you.
The problem is Josh Allen now looks like Carson Wentz. That's
that's cold. That's cold.
It may be cold, but it may be true. Look, just take a look at what the Colts have done their last eight games. They might be the best team in the NFL in the last eight games.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, Eric. Now, hold on a second.
Don't go to sleep today, pal. Well, you can go to sleep after the first quarter because it might be over.
We asked some NFL people, and I had identified the Colts, without talking to Bobcat, as a team that was dangerous. Anyway, all I know is the Browns did not suffer any did not have to have any ignominious retreat from losing to the Ofer line. So we're past that part of the roulette wheel. So away we go.
All right. Listen, we got to get Paul to NBA TV because he's a big TV star still, unlike the rest of us. So let's go.
All right. We bid you a fond adieu. We thank you as always. We love having you with us. You know that. And we miss seeing you. So come back and do it again when you can. All right.
Well, only after you recite the Muhammad Ali poem for my pay.
I love your show and I admire your style, but the pay was so cheap, I won't be back for a while.
So long.
Goodbye.
See you guys.
We'll be back after these messages. Well, that was fun. Hope the audience enjoyed it. Thanks to Eric Smith, Paul Jones. Yeah.
I can't resist throwing Eric Smith a few daggers about his Buffalo Bills. He might be the most rabid Bills fan I truly know. Like, he's a rabid Bills fan.
Well, you got to be losing your mind if you're a Bills fan, because they looked like they were the real deal at the beginning of the year, and now there's all kinds of holes.
Well,
and like Swiss cheese.
And we talked about it the last couple of weeks, Bob. Not only are they having trouble, the arch rival, New England, are playing well. Their defense is good. Bill Belichick has reinvented another quarterback.
You're right.
It is. The worst thing is the Bills might lose, but the Patriots are winning. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I know. And they're not doing it without that quarterback who's down in Tampa. Look, the Toronto Maple Leafs went out to L.A. And, they beat the snot out of the Kings. This was
unbelievable.
As arguably as good a game as they played, I think, this year.
Really, they played really well. And one of the things that was, to me, was so impressive with them with their depth came through. But when you look at everybody talks about it, when we have our guys on, when Mike Harrington's on, when Zeisberger's on, when Burnside's on, they always talk about strength down the middle. John Tavares scores, center. Auston Matthews scores, center. Jason Spezza scores, center. Strength down the middle. And the Maple Leafs right now are firing on all cylinders. And it's really quite amazing when you consider, you know, the panic button that everybody pressed, what, eight games into the season?
Guilty.
Yeah, we all did. We all did. And we were all wondering if, you know, we didn't call for Sheldon's head, but we said they have to do something. And really, the catalyst to it all was somebody who had a homecoming last night, and that was Jack Campbell, who has been their most valuable player this season in goal. And Campbell was good again last night.
Well, look, there's no doubt. I mean, I wouldn't trade Campbell for anybody right now. You know, just every game is a plus performance. Mm-hmm. I think he's had one game where you could kind of say, well, that he was a bit off that game. I think I can't remember who it was, whether it was Pittsburgh, somebody. But he had one game that I can recall this year where he wasn't like stellar.
Yeah.
And, but I think this team is playing much more responsibly defensively for a team that we expected to be kind of, in basketball terminology, run and gun. Like, we don't really care about defense. We're just going to outscore you. That's not what's been happening.
No. Morgan Riley's played well defensively. The other thing in watching them play last night was what – transition is still so important. You talked about their speed. Transition is so important. The Maple Leafs were able to take the puck out of their own zone with their defensemen at will. You know, LA did not do a very good job of the forecheck, but the Maple Leafs defensemen did a solid job of moving the puck out of their own zone. So, I mean, there's very little this team is doing wrong. Andre Kasha has become an asset. You know, Sheldon put Kasha, Kampf, and Richie together as a third or fourth line, whatever you want to call it. And it's worked well. Now, Kampf got hurt last night. I don't know how badly. He was taken out for precautionary reasons. But that third line, where people were wondering why they were spending that money on those three free agents particularly, it seems to have clicked in that position as a bottom six grouping. And that to me, is another part of why this team is playing so much better.
Well, and it's important to know that this LA Kings team is not a pushover anymore.
No.
They're not. I don't think they're a great team. I don't think I don't even know if they're a playoff team, but they're not a bad team anymore.
Well, they're not a disaster. But here's the thing, though. Who's their best player? Okay, I'm not, and I'll answer the question because it's rhetorical. Andre Kopitar is their best player.
Of course.
Okay. So last night, John Tavares wins the draw, beats Kopitar, who's supposed to be one of the best defensive forwards, best two-way players in the game, beats him to the front of the net, deflects the puck. Yep. Jason Spezza wins the draw, you know, beats Kopitar to the right spot, scores the goal. I mean, this team is doing things right and taking advantage of the best players of the other team.
For Toronto fans, victories for the Raptors and the Maple Leafs last night. That's about as good as you can get. We wish all of our American audience a happy Thanksgiving. And to those Americans living north of the 49th, hope you can find a turkey. And we'll catch you again tomorrow. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan. Goodbye, everybody.